between man and God in such a way that really they worked on this, and they are very careful on everything, but concerning the midot, concerning the behavior with other people, concerning the qualities, is not so well. First of all, why do we call the moral behavior of someone midot? Midot means, literally speaking, measures. The answer of our sages is, we call the human qualities midot because it is through this that you can measure someone. If you want to measure someone, it's through midot, through the human qualities. To such a point that I found once in the Siftei Chachamim, it's written that if a man keeps the mitzvot with the other people, between man and man, vadai, says the Siftei Chachamim, it's sure he will keep the mitzvot between man and God, because to keep between man and man, it's harder than between man and God. Why? Because the mitzvot between man and God, as I said first, before, they can become a routine, and it's very easy to keep by the routine. You are accustomed to eat kosher, you are accustomed to don the tefillin every morning and so on, but concerning the human qualities, it's so hard, it's something which is so deep-rooted in ourselves, that it's very hard to go just by the routine. You are so much tempted to get angry at this moment of the day, at this moment of the day. You need all kind of preparation to escape this. First of all, you need to analyze and to make what is called a cheshbon nefesh, that means an analysis of your character. And it's recommended to do it every night at the moment of Kriyat Shema Lamita, to think of your day, to think of the bad things that you could have done, and to think how you could repair it. And the Mishnah Brura says in Ilchot Shabbat, Mishnah Brura Gimel, that before Shabbat, every Friday, you have to think of the bad things of your week, to make teshuvah, and to try to think how you can repair this, because otherwise, says the Mishnah Brura, how is it possible to welcome the Queen Shabbat b'schave blaot, which means in the rags, as if your garments are all torn out, torn up, in the rags of your sins. So you have to do this examination every Friday before Shabbat. Rabbeinu Yonah says that he gives a piece of advice which is very good, is to write on a sheet of paper all the things that you have to better all the time, that you have to work on them, and to read this every day. So you shouldn't make a long list, but briefly, a summary, and it helps because it reminds you every day, and that you have to work on this, you have to work on this, and so on. Now there is a question which is very often asked by the people who are not religious. They ask, if Torah is true, how is it possible that you find also religious people who are, how do you say in English, crooked, yeah, and who are swindlers and who lie and this and this? The Torah itself is asking the question. Indeed, I want to give you two things, two answers to this. First of all, you know that there is material hunger. We are hungry for food. We are hungry for vegetables, for meat, because we need this. Our body needs this. In the same way, there is what could be called a spiritual hunger. A Jew who is away from Torah, for instance, since he learned the whole Torah in his mother's womb, this is written in the Gemara Nida, Daf Lamed, that we learn the whole Torah in our mother's womb, and then we forget the Torah when we come to birth, but nevertheless it stays somewhere in the unconscious level of our personality. That's the reason why you see people who are not religious at all, and when they hear the shofar, they are very moved. Or when they come to the Kotel, they are very moved, because the neshama, the soul, is awakening, since it knows deeply the secret of all these things. So now, how can we appease the spiritual hunger by the mitzvot? And I want to give you an example. Suppose a young kid says to his mother, Mommy, it's not necessary to prepare the dinner tonight. I don't want to eat all the things, the rice and the vegetables and the fruit and the meat and so on. I'm just so happy to eat chocolate. This is enough for me. And the mother explains to him that to eat chocolate is not enough. You need to have a balanced food, otherwise you cannot grow. You cannot be a normal person. With the child, for him, chocolate is enough. And if he eats the whole chocolate, he won't be able to eat anything else because he is not hungry anymore, but it's not balanced, it's not good. Same thing here. When we do the mitzvot, we don the tefillin, we keep Shabbat, we eat kosher, we appease the spiritual hunger. But the only thing is that we shouldn't forget to make a balance in the meal. That means once you appease your spiritual hunger by the mitzvot, by the commandment between man and God, don't forget you have the second half of the Ten Commandments. Don't you forget the mitzvot between man and man. And you know that from the Ten Commandments you can deduce all the commandments of the Torah. This has been done by Rav Sahadia Gaon, who deduced the 613 commandments of the Torah just from the Ten Commandments. I want to tell you also another thing concerning the resentment that non-religious people have with the religious people when they don't behave as they should behave, humanly speaking. Suppose an Israeli is obliged to keep Israel, and he's going to live very far in Guatemala, in South America. Why? For money reasons, for Panasa, to earn his livelihood. So he feels completely homesick because he doesn't know well Spanish, and he's not in his natural environment, so he doesn't feel well. But, you know, one thing comforts him, that every morning when he goes to his work, he passes in front of the Israeli embassy and he sees the flag, white and blue, and he sees the Star of David. So he feels a bit of comfort, as if suddenly he feels at home. There is like a link with the original home. And one morning he passes there and the embassy is completely destroyed. In the night, they destroy completely, they erase the building of the embassy because they are going to build something else. So he feels resentment, he feels disappointed. You know, you have to know this is exactly what happens between a religious Jew and a non-religious Jew. The non-religious Jew, it's true that he's non-religious, but this is only in surface, the surface of his being. Because deep down, his neshama, his soul, has a link with the Torah that he learned in his mother's womb. And same thing for all the human beings. Deep down in the soul, they have a link, a connection with God. But the Jew has a special connection with Torah because he needs Torah in order to give light to the whole world. So now, this non-Jew, when every morning he is going to his job, to his office, and he sees the Jew with his tefillin who is going to the synagogue, so deep down, subconsciously, he feels good. He has a little, very teeny link with his own concealed being, his own concealed soul, neshama. But when he hears that these religious Jew that he was meeting every morning with his tefillin and so on is indeed a thief, a swindler, it's as if the embassy is destroyed. Why? Because this religious Jew is the embassy, the last link that he has with himself, with his natural home, with his soul, which is the home. And when this is destroyed, he feels all the bearings, all all his links, his last links with himself are completely destroyed. And this is why he is so angry. He is angry because subconsciously he tells you, you were my embassy, you were my last embassy with myself. Yes, I was so homesick. Why did you destroy this? Now, I want to speak of something very important concerning mitzvot ben adam lechaveru, the mitzvot between man and man, the way you look at others. So first of all, we start from the parasha of Noach, which is very important in this field. Very briefly speaking, there it said that Noah planted a vine and he got drunk, and then he was naked in his tent. And one of his sons, the last son, Cham, saw him. And what did he do? I just want to summarize the situation. He didn't do anything to cover his father, but he just said to the other brothers outside, please come and see. So first of all, he looks at the father who is naked, it's not good. He doesn't do anything, and he calls the other people to see. And the attitude of the two other brothers is completely opposite. What did they do? First of all, they covered the father, and then they did everything not to look at him. So I want to show you the situation, how it was. They did like this. Suppose the father is lying there in the tent. This is the tent. So both of them, they took a garment, a kind of blanket, let's say, and they put on their shoulders of both of them, and they were going toward the father, but backwards, in order to avoid looking at the father. So the text is saying, Vayelchu achoranit, like this, and the father is there. And then it's written, Upneem achoranit, and their faces were backwards. So Rashi is asking a very simple question, listen well. It's written, Vayelchu achoranit. They were walking backwards. So why do I need to say Pneem Achoranit, that their faces were backwards? It's obvious. So Rashi explains like this. This is very intelligent. It's not superfluous to say that their faces were backwards. Because how can you cover someone like this? You know, it's very uneasy. You need to face him in order to make a precise gesture. So Rashi explains the text like this. They were going backwards. But then when they wanted to cover the father, they turned their faces to the father, and at this moment, Pneem Achoranit, their faces were backwards in order not to see the father. Because since their bodies were facing the father, so they needed now to put the face, only the face, Achoranit, backwards. And now you understand why you have two details. They went backwards. This is in the first stage. And when the text is saying their faces were backwards, Pneem Achoranit, that means that in the meantime, they turned back in order to face the father, to make a very accurate gesture, to cover the body of the father, which was naked. And at that very precise moment, they put their faces backwards to avoid looking at the father. You see how much they tried not to see the father. And on this, the Baal Shem Tov is asking a very, very precise question. God is not, chas v'shalom, talkative. God, every word in the Torah is weighed. There is no word which is useless, which is superfluous. So since so, the Baal Shem Tov is asking the question, the end of the verse says, Upneem achoranit, as I already said, their faces were backwards, ve'ervat aviyam lo ra'u, and they didn't see the nakedness of the father. So the Baal Shem Tov is asking, he says, since the text tells me their faces were backwards, so it's obvious that they couldn't see the father. So why why the text is adding Ervat Aviem lo ra'u. They didn't see the nakedness of the father. So the answer comes after a long, long way. But to be more clear today, I will give straight away the answer. The answer is like this. When the text says, Pneihem achoranit, their faces were backwards, this is a physical detail, physical information, that they turned away, they turned out their faces in order not to see the Father, that the eyes shouldn't see the Father. And then, when the text is adding, Ervat Aviem lo ra'u, they didn't see the nakedness of the Father, that means mentally speaking. What do I mean mentally speaking? There the thought was not thinking, and thinking was not obsessed by the nakedness of the Father. The only thing, the only reason why they look at the thing is to try to repair the situation. But Cham, not only that he looked at the Father, but he didn't do anything to repair. He didn't cover the Father. So why did he look? Because Bedakei Dakut, in a very subtle way, says the text. Today we would say subconsciously. He was attracted by all these two aspects, to get drunk and to be naked. And this is the reason why he looked at the Father without any purpose. And it's as if the text tells me, tell me what you are looking at, and I will tell you what you are. Very often when people are fascinated by something, by some papers, by some videos, that means that they have the craving for this. And since they don't do it in an actual way, they do it by looking at. And this is a very, very important thing in modern psychology. Once I had some lectures of psychoanalysis, and we had a whole lecture on this, that people with their eyes looking at something, they satisfy a secret desire. But this is exactly here the lesson of the text. And the Hasidut says, that's the reason why he was called Ham. Ham means hot. Shmo Mochiyah Halav. His name proves his real personality. The heat of drunkenness and being naked, he had this in himself. And this is the reason why he was attracted by seeing the Father like this. It's as if, for instance, you see some violence in the street. You have people, they're not interested to look at this. They just go their way. Or maybe they call a policeman to stop this, to stop the riot. But they're not interested at looking at this. And some people stop and look and look. They are fascinated. That means that deep down they have some violent aspect in their personalities. So now the Baal Shem Tov says to his Talmidim, you know, this is, if you want to have the whole picture of this, it is brought by Rabbi Nachum Michernobyl in his book Me'or Enaim. It has been translated The Light of the Eyes, yes, and it's according to Parasha. So this commentary of Rabbi Nachum Michernobyl is in Parashat Chukat. At the beginning of Parashat Chukat, you will find all this. So the thing is like this. Baal Shem Tov said, and it's also in a Sicha of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, a Sicha on Noach, which is in Chelek Vav or Chelek Yud. I don't remember. One of them you will find. So the thing is like this. And he quotes Rabbi Nachum Michernobyl there in Me'or Enaim. The Baal Shem Tov once said to his Talmidim, to his disciples, when you see something bad, yes, by someone else, that's the proof that you have the same bad thing in your character. So they ask him why. So he said, listen, everything happens by divine providence. Nothing is by chance. So if God wanted you to see that this man is a liar, or this man loses his temper, or this man is a thief, that means you needed to see this, to understand that you have this in some degree, in some extent, in yourself. So why God doesn't want to tell you this straight away? Because when you say to someone straight away his problems, he doesn't accept, he resists, because it's too hard to accept. So how God makes you understand? By something more, less straight. He shows you someone else, and through someone else you understand yourself. So the Talmidim asked the Baal Shem Tov, they said, okay, let's accept that everything, every second, is by the will of God, is by divine providence. There is absolutely no, at every moment of the life, there is no chance. The Baal Shem Tov shows this once to one of his pupils. The Baal Shem Tov was walking once on a path, it's a well-known story, and he had a disciple with him. And suddenly a leaf fell from the tree, and the leaf just fell down by the side of a worm, and the worm ate the leaf. So the Baal Shem Tov said to his disciple, you see, when leaf falls down away from the tree, this is decided by God. But not only this, the distance between the leaf and the tree, just to be by the side of the worm, this is also wanted and decided by God so that the worm could eat. So everything is by divine providence. So if God wanted you to see something else, something bad by someone else, that's the proof that you are also concerned by this, and you have to repair this in your character. So the disciples asked the Baal Shem Tov, they said, our master, let's accept that everything is by divine providence. But maybe the divine providence wanted me to see the bad thing by Peter or by John. Not because I have this thing, but just to help him to get out of the thing. So the Baal Shem Tov answered like this. He said, you are right, and I am right. And indeed, listen, it depends how you look at the bad things by others. When you see something bad by someone else, if you just think, how can I help him to repair this? What can I do? Like Shem and Yafet, the two sons of Noah, when they saw the father drunk and naked, they only thought, what can we do? What do we have to do? What's the action, tachlis, that we have to do? And they did it. So that's a proof that indeed you don't have this thing in yourself. And that's the reason why the text is saying here, their faces were backwards, and they didn't see mentally, they didn't see the nakedness of the father. Of course they saw that he was naked, otherwise they wouldn't have covered the father. But the mantle was not, the mind was not deepening this aspect. They were not thinking, ruminating this. They didn't need.
He's mentioning and looking, seeing. Yeah. He just mentioned. So when they say it's assur to look at a woman, I mean, if you accidentally just by glance, you just mention.
No, here they just.
A woman, so what can you do? I mean, you're just walking your way.
This is another thing, but here I mean they just looked what they needed to look, but no more.
Yeah.
Just in order to cover the father. And now, if you look at the thing and you think of it and you think of it and you are fascinated by this, so that's the Rabbi Nachum Michanobin says, that's the proof that the other person that you look at him now is like a mirror of yourself. and God wanted you to see this person, maybe to help him to get out of the problem, but also to help you to get out of the problem. And when you look at someone, look at the way you look. And this is an information. And believe me, I did it very often when I have something which is burning in myself, because this man did this and this man did this. Suddenly I say, stop. In my life, many, many years ago maybe, did I do something which looks like this, or did I do the same thing? And I always find something without forcing these things. I always find that, yes, me too. Once I remember I did this and I did this, and it helps you to get to go forward. This is one aspect of God's rachamim, God's pity, that God gives you all the time informations concerning what you have to repair. But very, very many, very, very often people are blind, deaf. They don't want to see it, they don't want to hear. But you have always hints in your day-to-day life to what you have to repair. And now, the thing is like this. When you look at someone at a bad aspect of his personality and you are fascinated, not only it's the sign that you have this in yourself, but this will strengthen, yes? How do you say strengthen? Strengthen this aspect in your personality. The more you look at it, and the more it will be deep-rooted in your character. That's the reason why we say, for instance, that a doctor, according to halacha, has the right to see a naked woman, when he's in his profession, and there is no risk he will have bad thoughts. The Shulchan Aruch says, ki hu asuk bimlachto. He is busy with a therapeutic approach, as if when you are in good things, you are protected from the bad things. But when you are in the bad things, for the bad things themselves, so the bad things in yourself will be stronger and stronger. And this you have to care, you have to be very careful. So according to the Baal Shem Tov, you have two stages in the way you look at others. I just want to resume before I go further. The first stage, when you look at someone and you are not fascinated by the bad aspect that you discover, that's the proof that you are not like this. You just have to help him to get out of this. But when you look at someone and you completely think of it, your mind is completely busy with this. So that's the proof that through him, God wanted to show you that you have the same thing in yourself and that you have to repair it. And now you have a third stage of looking at others. And this is described by Rabbi Nachman Mibreslav in his Likutei Moharan. The third stage is that not only you are fascinated by the bad things that you see by other people, but you feel hatred. And you wish them this, and you wish them this, and he deserves this. So that's the sign that the thing is very, very deep-rooted in you, and it's so poisonous that you have hatred. You have this poison of hatred. And the Baal Shem Tov, the Rabbi Nachman Mibreslav, who is also a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, he's I think, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. He says like this, he says that in such a case, what happens? It happens that, and this is very deep, this will be the end of the shiur, I need to explain very carefully. He says that if someone made a fault, a sin, and God wants to punish him, first of all, we have to understand why we have to be punished, why we need to suffer for the faults. We'll speak afterwards of this. But suppose Someone made a sin, committed a sin, so he has to be punished. He cannot be punished, says Rabbi Nachman says, unless he makes himself the decree on himself of punishment, what he deserves. But if you ask him, what do you deserve for this sin? He will be very lenient. Yes? He won't be so severe at himself. So God is making in such a way that this man, for instance, one day he robbed someone of his property. Okay, and he forgot. So this man will be robbed. And when he will see the thief, he will say to the thief, if you don't give me back, you deserve this and this and this. But indeed, he speaks of himself because he did the same thing. So when he makes a decree on the other person, he makes a decree on himself. And there, in the heavenly court, God says, did you listen? What he decided, did you listen to the sentence? The sentence is for himself. So when you see someone bad by someone else and you say he deserved this and this, you will be the first punished. Why? Because you did the same thing once, even if you don't remember. And the fact that you feel hatred is the proof that the thing is deep, deep rooted in you. So now, let's go further. This is the meaning, Rabbi Nachman says, of what is written in Pirkei Avot, "V'nifra'im min ha'adam midaato v'shelo midaato," that God makes a man pay when he is conscious that it is a payment, or when he is not conscious. Midaato v'shelo midaato, and the vav there, which means normally and, which translates by or. Very often in the Torah itself, vav, which should be and, indeed it's translated or. But here, Rabbi Nachman says, you can also translate and. God makes the man pay what he has to pay for his faults when he is conscious and not conscious. How is it possible that you are conscious and not conscious in the same time? They are two opposite things. Rabbi Nachman says, because when this man says, this guy, he deserves this and this and this for what he did, he is conscious that he is wishing bad things to this man. But he is not conscious in the same time that he speaks of himself, because he did the same thing. So man is punished when he is in the same time conscious and not conscious. Conscious that he desires bad things for this man, and not conscious that this man is his mirror, because he did the same thing. And Rabbi Nachman says, we find this in the story of Rabbi David HaMelech and Bathsheba. David HaMelech made a sin that he took the wife of Uriah. Indeed, she was not his wife anymore, and so on. We explain this in the Talmud, in Tractate Ketubot. But nevertheless, we explain that at the level of David HaMelech, what he did was not as he should have done. And Natan Navi, the prophet Natan, came to explain this to the king David. How did he do? He said to David, to the king, he said, you know, there was someone who was very rich. He had a flock of sheep, very important. And by his side, there was a neighbor, very poor. The neighbor had only one kifsa. Kifsa in English, how do you say? Ewe. It's E-W-E. How do you pronounce it? Ewe. Yeah? The female of the sheep. A ewe. Thank you. And this man who had a whole flock of sheep, who was very rich, he wanted to invite people, so he decided to take the ewe of the poor man and to kill it. And that's it. I want to know, he asked the king, I want to know, this rich man, what does he deserve? So the king became angry and said, this man deserves to be killed. He deserves to be killed. So the Prophet said to the king, "You are this man. You are this man. Because with all the women that you have, all the wives that you have, why did you take just the wife of Uriah?" And the king admitted, and he made teshuvah and so on. So Rabbi Nachman says, this is the way that God makes in such a way that you make the decree of punishment on yourself. He shows you someone who is like you, your mirror, and you are not conscious he is your mirror, and you say, this man deserved this and this. Oh, you pronounced your sentence. So now, that means like this. When you look at others, and not only you are burning on this, not only you are boiling inside, but you go up to hatred and you wish bad things to him, that means that the evil is so deep rooted in yourself that you need to pass through suffering. So now, two things remain to be understood. What suffering can do to erase a sin? And second thing, why is it so that a man cannot be punished, according to the Rabbi Nachman Mibreslav, unless he decides by himself what he deserves? Let's answer first the second question. There are two kinds of punishments. One kind of punishment is like a warning to prevent the person to do it again. For instance, you drive a car and you go on despite the red light, so you have a fine, because if you don't receive a fine, you will do it next time, or another, someone else will do it next time. This is one kind of punishment. Or for instance, when you hit a child to make him understand that he shouldn't break this and break this, it's like a barrier. Ligdor milta, they say in the Talmud, to build a barrier to protect society from bad people. But you have a deeper way of punishment. And to understand this, we have to think of an excerpt of the Gemara in Ta'anit concerning the master of Rabbi Akiva, Nachum Ish Gamzu. Nachum Ish Gamzu was a very big tzaddik, but he had no arms, no legs, and he was blind. And he was put in a bed, and the feet of the bed were in water in order to prevent the insects from getting on his body, because he couldn't do anything to chase them away. He had no arms, no legs, and he was blind. So he was in a house which was fragile, and the house could collapse. So the disciples told him, "Our master, we are going to take your bed and to put you in another house. You cannot stay here." So he told them, "Listen, you know what? First of all, take out the whole furniture. And you take me at the end, completely at the end. Because as long as I am in the house will stay erect. It won't crumble down." They said, "Okay." So they take out the whole furniture, and at the end, completely at the end, they took out his bed. And once the bed passes through the threshold, passes the door, the house is completely collapsing. So they understood that the house was standing, was keeping on its basis just by the merit of the tzaddik. So they told him, "Our master, since you are such a big tzaddik, how is it that we see you in such a situation? How is it possible?" So he said like this: "All this situation, I wanted it. I asked for it. Because once I was going on my way with three donkeys, one with food, one with drinks, and one with sweets. And there was a poor man who told me, Rabbi Farnesini, please give me food, I'm hungry. And I said, okay, just I want to unload the donkey. I didn't have time to unload the donkey. He fell down and he died. Because he was at the last moment, he couldn't bear anymore and died. So I said to this poor man, I made a prayer to God. I said, my hands, which were not quick enough, should be taken away. My legs, who didn't run to you, should be taken away. My blinds, who didn't have pity on you, should be taken away. Of course, what he did is forbidden for us to do. At our level, we are not such big tzaddikim. We always pray to get the atonement of our sins. Bli surim v'cholayim raim. This is the formula. Without suffering and without bad diseases. But in his level, he understood he needed to do this. Why? Because what is a sin? A sin, they explain in Kabbalah, is like a shell. That means around your soul, which is divine, which is pure, which is always pure despite all the sins, you made like a wall, a shell, klipa. And so you don't feel anymore the light, the inspiring light of the divine strength which is in yourself, which is the neshama. So this is something which is like a stranger in yourself. And you need to expel the stranger. How? When you are aware of your sin and you say, oh, this sin, what did I do? You shout in yourself. This is like vomiting the sin. And this is the first stage of getting rid of the sin. So Nachum Mishgamzu, all his life long, he vomited the sin out. How? Because all his life long, he wanted to show that he has no solidarity. Yes? He has no solidarity whatever with the tools of the sin. What are the tools of the sin? The legs, the arms, the eyes. Get away, get away, get away. And all his life long, he vomited the sin through rejecting the tools of the sin. This is a very high level. We see that the scouts which were sent to Israel when they went out of Egypt in order to see how to conquer Israel. When they came back from Israel, they made a very big sin. They said, we cannot take this land. So they deterred the people from going to Israel. They sinned with their tongues and they died with their tongues. Why? Because indeed, if they had been conscious, aware of the sin, like Nachum Mishgamzu, all the lifelong they would have said, my tongue, what did I do with my tongue? And this is a way of vomiting away the sin. But since they didn't do it, God made it in such a way that they shouted on their tongues. How? By a disease on the tongue. You know, in chemistry, you have a principle. Nothing is created. Nothing is lost. Everything is transformed. You have the same thing in the spiritual realm. They had to shout on their tongue, my tongue, what did I do with my tongue? Which is a way of vomiting away the sin of the tongue. You didn't do it, you will cry on your tongue. The shout that you have to express on your tongue will be expressed anyway, in another way, by a disease, but it will be expressed. So now you understand. And this is the Lubavitcher Rebbe who explained this in the commentary on the Likutei Moharan. He quotes the Likutei Moharan of Rabbi Nachman of Breslav. He explains, you know why you cannot be punished unless you make the decree of your punishment yourself? Because the soul needs to get rid of the sin. And the soul is so pure. The soul is divine. And nobody can punish God. He has to decree himself his own punishment. But what does it mean, the punishment of God? What does it mean, the punishment of the soul? The soul is divine. You cannot punish God, you cannot punish the soul. Punish here is not the first stage of punishment, like hitting a child who made a mistake, like giving a fine to someone who is driving in the red light. Punish here is very more subtle. It means to get rid of the sin, to vomit out the sin. And this has to come from the soul itself. Because the soul is pure and it wants to get rid of the shells which are like a jail, like a prison of the soul. So the same way God, you cannot punish God, God has to decree by himself. Same thing with the soul. It is the way the Lubavitcher Rebbe explains this excerpt of Rabbi Nachman Mibraslav, which says that a man has to decree on himself the punishment. And since he won't do it because man is always kind with himself, how God is doing, God shows him someone who does the same thing as he did before and he doesn't remember, and he will say, this man deserves this and this. Ah! In the heavenly court, God says, okay, he pronounced the sentence by himself. And this is what David Amiller said concerning this man who stole the sheep. Indeed, he was not speaking of this man, he was speaking of himself, and he didn't know. This is quoted by Rabbi Nachman there in the Likutei Moharan. So you have three stages to look at others. The first stage we learn from Shem and Yafet. When you look at someone and you feel not concerned, you don't think of it. Mentally speaking, they didn't see the nakedness of the father. That's the reason why it's written, Pneihem achoranit, their faces were backwards. Ve'ervat aviyam lo ra'u, and moreover, the nakedness of the father they didn't see. Why do you need to add they didn't see? The faces were backwards. Mentally speaking, they didn't see. They were not diving with their thoughts in this aspect. They just thought, what can we do to repair the situation? And they repaired the covert. And they didn't look. They were not interested to look. There's the sign. You are not concerned by this. Just wanted you to see this in order to help the other person to get out of it. But when you think of it and you are fascinated by this, like Cham means hot. That means that the heat of the craving of the other person is in you. And God wanted you to see this in order to understand that you have the same thing. And when, third stage, not only you are fascinated by this and you are boiling inside, but you wish him bad things, you are in the stage of hatred. That means that evil is really, really very deep rooted in you, and you need the suffering to get rid of this. And this suffering, this is the third stage of looking at others. You make a decree on yourself without being conscious that it is on yourself. And this is, according to Rabbi Nachman, the deep meaning of Pirkei Avot. Nifraim mida adam shedaato veshelo midaato. Pirkei Avot says, God makes a man pay when he is conscious and not conscious. He is conscious, he is aware that he speaks of someone else, but he is not aware that this someone else is the mirror of himself, because he did the same thing as this person once and he doesn't remember. So you have to be very careful when you look at others. And also what I want to say, we speak of hatred. Our sages say that hatred is a very, very deep rooted thing in every man. And this is the basis of all the problems that we have with other people. We touched just a bit this today with Rabbi Nachman Mibreslav, the way you look at others. But this is also implied in Lashon Hara, in judging the other people in a positive way and not in a negative way. And it needs a shiur in itself. So since it's almost 10, I won't make the shiur hatred. No, I will ask Rav Horovitz maybe to finish tomorrow. This is it. How should we behave when the attitude of the other people make us hate them, what we should do. And today we begin, but it's just the beginning. Today, the main topic was looking at others. How do we look at others? Yeah. Okay. I thank you.